In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I'm Brian Shackman, along with co-host John Senecal. On the agenda today, we'll talk Red Sox, Jaron Duran. We'll talk Yankees and Juan Soto. We'll talk about Machine Gun Kelly and a little bit of a little look back at the Olympics as well. John, how are you?
I'm good. I can't believe we're actually talking that we're going to talk about Machine Gun Kelly on this show. That's
The more I watch that, though, I mean, I want to get into it later, the more it bothers me, too. And we'll get into it and a little bit later in the show. I mean, obviously, between the Houston Astros sweep at Fenway and Jaron Duran's moronic behavior, I thought that I was pretty much going to be done for the 17th time with the Red Sox, but alas, I am not, because the Texas Rangers are a good salve to any wound. And honestly, the American League, it's like nobody wants to win. You know what I mean? It's like, it's bizarre. The Royals are not playing great all of a sudden. Seattle's not playing that well all of a sudden. And
the only team that's actually playing good is like Oakland. And it's crazy when you look at the AL.
It is kind of funny that that's true, and they're just not. I mean, I always look at the 10-game span stuff, and I mean, very, very pedestrian. Whereas the top end of the NL, the folks like the Diamondbacks and the Padres have been on absolute fire. So I don't know if it's a swing or not, but as it relates to the Red Sox, I mean, listen, the Astros thing was kind of humiliating in a lot of ways, and the Sox have no bullpen, and we can break it. Everyone else talks about that. People also have talked a lot about Jaron Duran, and I don't want to say what word he said, but he was getting heckled at home plate. Everyone could hear it. Someone said he needed a tennis racket, and he called him an effing blank back, and it was a gay slur. I'm not going to say it, and was suspended 2 games. And listen, there's 2 levels of this. You know, one is a little bit too obvious, and one maybe is obvious but less so. If you're a professional athlete in this day and age, especially with all the microphones that are around Fenway Park with this documentary and stuff, you just got to be smarter, and there's no excuse for it, right? I mean, and again, he could have called him an a-hole, but he didn't call him an a-hole. Right. You know what I mean? And so it showed a little bit of who he is, and that's
unfortunate. It's really unfortunate, to be honest with you.
Because you want to cheer for him, and maybe he is a jerk. You know, maybe he's a jackass. I mean, they're all young kids. I always give someone in their early 20s a break because they're so young and stupid. And you and I were young and stupid, but we didn't do it in front of millions of people.
Right. And that's what you got to be conscious of. I mean, you have to be conscious of that. No matter how you were raised or what your beliefs are or whatever, I mean, you can't let that be public. I mean, nobody's perfect. We know that, right? Nobody's perfect. But like you said, when you're scrutinized like that with the microphones, with the cameras, and especially like the Netflix documentary going on, you got to be conscious of that. You have to be.
Well, I mean, not only to say it to your buddies playing poker, but to say it at home plate in front of 35,000 people. And so to me, it's one of those things where it goes beyond excusing somebody for being young and stupid. It shows you a little bit of the dialogue that it's like when my son comes home from camp. He's 14, he comes home from camp, he's dropping F-bombs left and right, because when the counselors are around, that's how they talk.
Right.
And so it gives me a window into how he talks when he's not with us. And so from a psychological perspective, Jaron Duran told you how he talks. That's who he is.
Yep.
And so that's a disappointment. The second level of that is when he apologized. It just, you got to come out and say, listen, that was awful. A, I shouldn't react to fans. And B, you know, I should never use that term, and I won't use it again, and I'm ashamed. It's not what we got. It's not what we got. And so whoever advises him is terrible at crisis management. unless he ignored them.
Well, he basically just said he needs to learn from this and become a better person. That's pretty much what he said. I mean, that's the blueprint answer. That's the blueprint answer.
It makes me not want to cheer for him. It really does. It really does. And he is jacked and he's talented. And it just makes me be like, ugh.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, you know, we had talked about this right after the All-Star game. This guy is on the all-time high of a career for a young player. He's starting his career out like kind of like a Juan Soto. Like, he is on a heater right out the gates of his career. All-Star game MVP. You know, I was praising him up and down after that. You know, he was on the field with his family, and you know, I got a totally different impression of him. But now, I mean, like you said, the tiger shows its stripes. At the time. But, you know, and the other thing that's crazy about this is, you know, earlier in the day, he got the Red Sox Heart and Hustle Award.
Oh, my. And Jesus, like, what talks about values and character.
Demonstrates a passion for the game of baseball and best embodies the values, spirits, and traditions of the game. And then that night, he goes off and bangs a slur, you know, a homophobic slur.
Anti-gay, whatever.
Yeah,
you say.
I mean, it's tough. Listen, in this day and age, it's even worse, right? I mean, it's always not good. But I can remember... years ago, I mean, I worked in television for years. And let's be honest, there's a lot of men in television that are homosexuals. And it's been like that for a long time, which is totally fine. Now, I got used to that. I, myself, one of my really great friends is gay. And he's probably one of my best friends I've had ever. And we worked with him. And he's never officially came out to me, but I know he is. But I was working with this person and I slipped up. And I, to this day, feel bad about it. Now, I didn't say the word Jaren Durant said. I just said gay. I just said, like, in passing, I said something about something gay. And I, to this day, I feel bad about it. Because I know he heard it. But it wasn't ill intent. But that's still undermined in my vocabulary. You know what I'm saying? I haven't said that word in ages. But I slipped up, and this is probably 15 years ago, and I still feel bad about this to this day. Now, I'm still friends with this guy. I went to his wedding, but that still sits with me, you know, and that's 15 years later, and that's nothing on national television. That's nothing, you know, that's been slugged through the media. I mean, we're talking pre-Twitter here. So it matters. It definitely matters.
I think the key is for people who are listening to the podcast, certainly John is not a politically correct obsessed person. If you know John Senegal, that's not the case. And I don't consider myself, I toe the line with my language, you know, but I don't consider myself, you know, if there's politically correct way on one side, you know, I'm more in the middle. I think people should be responsible and not offend other people, but what you say or do in your own space is your own business, even if I don't like it. And so I'm saying we're not making political statements here. We're just saying that it's just when you look at it and you understand all of it in context, it really makes it makes it look worse the more you consider it. And so I'm not offended because of what he said. I'm offended that he has these things in his mind and his heart, and he's too stupid to understand what he did.
Yeah.
So
it will be interesting to see as we speak now. So he should be coming back today, tonight, to this game because he had served his 2-game suspension.
Which I'm going to the game, by the way.
Oh, you are. So it's going to be interesting. Brian, are you going to cheer for him? I mean, I heard a lot of people saying he's going to get an ovation, a huge round of applause from Boston fans. You know how Boston is.
So it's going to be Boston.
It will be interesting to see how they receive him in Boston. You know,
I'm not a booer, but I'm not going to sit and get him a standing O. I'm certainly not going to do that. So. I'll be in the bleachers. Hopefully, I'm hopeful that my 16-year-old son can drive home so I can have a couple beers. So anyway, that's Durant. The Red Sox, listen, they're hanging around. I don't have much specific to say other than, you know, relief pitching. And
Tristan Cassis should be back this coming weekend, so that's a positive thing if that all goes according to plan. The Dominic Smith experiment can go to rest.
That guy, he's a heart attack.
Players that you didn't know played the game anymore. Dominic Smith.
Right. Dominic Smith. I don't even know who he was. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Chackman. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Meanwhile, the Yanks, again, you know, talking broadly, obviously, the Juan Soto, 3 home runs in a game. And if it weren't Matt Sroys, who produces this podcast and our morning show on WTIC News Talk 1080, basically said that game that he hit the 3 home runs, they would have lost the game if he wasn't in the game.
Yeah, he was their 1-0. Whole offense.
Yeah.
Whole offense.
And it kind of sums it up, right? A Judge and Soto, and then there's, I don't know.
Well, that's pretty much it. I mean, that's all you got in that lineup. And then it's like I said, you throw the hats, you throw the names in a hat, and you pick out who's going to be one, and then five through nine. It's just four through nine. It's an interesting dynamic that Yankees are working with, and you know, they're squeaking by because the rest of the league, American League, and especially American League East, is just not performing. Everybody's just basically been mediocre since the break, and. That, and for the Yankees, fortunately, they're sticking around. For the Red Sox, they're fortunately sticking around. But, you know, like you said, the Red Sox have to climb over teams that aren't in the AL East. The thing, obviously, that worries me with the Yankees going forward is pitching, starting, and bullpen. The bullpen's an absolute disaster. You know how I feel about Clay Holmes. He showed it on Sunday night where he threw 45 pitches and couldn't even get out of his own way. And then you got the starters, you know, Nestor Cortez. You could say what you want about him, but it was against the White Sox. I mean, I feel like if my son's 18U team is on, they could beat the White Sox. It's just let's just table our expectations here. Yes, the Yankees did get blown out 12-2, but in the bigger picture, you're losing a player that you just got who's been a spark plug, and that's Jazz Chisholm. And that's a huge blow to the Yankees if it finds out that he is going to hit the IL today. I don't know. I'm a little nervous about that one. They're talking UCL injury, which is his left arm. It's not his throwing arm, so who knows how that injury could play out.
I love that guy.
I mean, honestly, I mean, everybody can say what they want about the trading deadline, but like, listen, Jazz Chisholm's played 14 games for the Yankees, and he's got a .316 average. He's hit 7 home runs, 11 RBIs, 5 stolen bases. I mean, come on. You need to tell me over 14 games you wouldn't take that on any team? Plus, he's a spark plug, and he's young, and he's a left-handed bat that the Yankees need. And that is such a big blow to the Yankees if they lose him for the season. It is a major blow.
He's got a great personality, too.
Great personality.
I really, really like him. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm going to say this, you know, and I think I view the Yankees the same way I did with the Aroldis Chapman era. If you don't have a better guy at the back end, you can't win the title. And I mean, the only thing I would say that is in the Yankees' favor is that I think the American League is weak. I really think the American League is weak. I mean, the Orioles and the Yankees are the only two teams that are really scary. I know Cleveland's got a lot of wins, and Houston will always be dangerous because I think they're going to now run away with the AL West. But the truth is, if you look at the two leagues, I'm sorry. I think that the Phillies, the Dodgers, the D-backs, and the Padres are all better. I mean, I don't know. It's just my opinion. So, I mean, I think the Yankees, they have an advantage because I think the league is down, but they have a disadvantage because I don't think they have a World Series caliber closer.
No, they don't. They definitely don't have a World Series caliber closer. And the way things are now, I mean, you have to fix that from internally. Now, I've heard speculation about, you know, possibly moving Heel to the bullpen to monitor his innings because he's, you know, obviously he's coming off an injury. His innings are already high and we still have 40 something games to go, which means he probably has about 7 starts left maybe. But again, you need to fix that during the season. How do you take a closer that has electric stuff, his last start was awful, a few starts before that have been good, and turn him into a closer? I don't see that happening. But it's not just the closer, it's the setup guys. I mean, nobody is stepping up to say that they're reliable. And of course, say what you want about Clay Holmes. I mean, the guy just can't control his pitches. And if you can't control your pitches, hitters are just going to wait on you. Like, you can tell when that guy is off, and he's off more than he's on. I mean, I think maybe one out of every 6 times he pitches, he's lights out. And that's not going to work in the postseason. It's just not going to work. Just like the fact that Judge and Soto are the only two real hitters on the team. That's not going to work in the postseason either. So the Yankees have got a huge mountain to climb here. And I think, you know, it's amazing that I'm saying this. I mean, it's not amazing. It's just fact. I mean, they need Anthony Rizzo back big time. And I don't see him coming back for probably another month.
Well, if you don't have him and you don't have Chisholm, I mean, It's a problem, and we're saying this for a team that goes into Wednesday's games in first place. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Let's turn to some lighter stuff for a second here. I didn't know it until you alerted me to it, and so I just watched the Machine Gun Kelly first pitch, which I encourage everyone to go out and take a look. It was Cleveland against the Cubs. And you should go watch it, but I'll just tell you, you know, he steps on the mound, acts like he's about to pitch it, then he runs off the mound and throws it in the stands. and then the mascots try to recover, and somebody caught it in the stands or whatever. You can go first with your hot take, John.
Well, I look at it this way. I mean, I feel like the first pitch thing has kind of become like, it's like a Savannah Bananas kind of thing. It's turning into this novelty thing. Like back in the day, you know, you actually get up on the mound and you'd throw to like an actual catcher. I mean, it might not be the starting catcher, but it's not some just dude that goes out there with a glove. You know what I mean?
Right.
You've done first pitches in the minor leagues. That's even worse. They got 14 people out there throwing fake balls to some backup guy who, you know, some intern that had his glove on. That's ridiculous. We're talking about Major League Baseball here. We're talking about a first place team playing for the best record in baseball, a hometown guy who's from Cleveland, who supposedly is, you know, passionate about a game, passionate about his hometown team. Then he gets up there and makes an absolute joke. A joke. It's a joke. You have a shot to get up there and throw a first pitch at a Major League Baseball game. Not many people get to do that, right? And basically, it's only famous people. You're not getting out there just some local Joe unless you save someone's life or something, right? Like, I get it. You want to be a gymnast and do a flip and throw the ball? That's cool, right? That's different. You did it. You don't walk 10 feet off the mound and whip it into the stands. First of all, you shouldn't have to walk off the mound to throw it in the stands, you moron. Throw the damn ball over the net, right? How what a rag arm do we have here, all right? Chances are he wasn't even going to hit the plate. That's probably why he did it. He didn't want to look like a complete moron up there. I hate the whole idea about it. Major League Baseball and these teams need to get better about this. Get these bozos off the mound that stop and can't throw a pitch over the plate. And if you're going to throw a first pitch at a Major League Baseball game, do some practice, right? Get out in your yard and throw a ball. Some of these people that are throwing haven't looked like they've ever picked up a baseball in their life. And they're going to get out there in front of 40,000 people and throw a first pitch. Come on, get out here with that noise. That guy's a joke.
I don't disagree. I am a lefty with no control, and I can throw the ball well and hard, but I don't have control, so I end up going the other way and just really soft tossing it because I'm so scared. And you're right. I could be the seventh of 12 first pitches at the Hartford Yard, go to the AA affiliate in Hartford, and I still throw a little Ephus pitch because I don't want to embarrass myself. And it's still, I still embarrass myself. But I don't know if you can put the genie back in the bottle. They now use it, especially in the minors, as a way to make people feel special and to thank sponsors.
I get the minors. I get the minors thing. But we're talking Major League Baseball here.
No, I know. But I even think all of it, there should be a degree of exclusivity to it. And it is kind of a special thing. I put it back in with the category of, like, it's different on degree of gravity. With Durant, it's just stupid, right? I mean, it's not even that it's like, it's just dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't even know how to get around it other than the fact that it's just stupid.
I mean, the mascots don't even have expressions, and they look like they were like, what the hell is going on here?
Seriously, you have a perma smile on the mascot, and it still looked like he was stunned.
Oh, jeez, I can't even get it. And you got the chance to get up on the mound. Like, you towed the rubber. Most of the time, you don't even get to do that.
I know, and it is sort of a sacred place. And, you know, you could make some societal, like, degradation of our culture comment. I'm not anti-Machine Gun Kelly. I don't care about the tattoos or his personal life. It makes no difference
to me. No, me either. I could care less about the person. I'm talking baseball Machine Gun Kelly here.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, it is kind of a bummer when you think about, like, values and stuff, like, that you don't respect it a little bit more. And I sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but I think, like, part of baseball, part of its charm is its problem, right? I think the traditions are what make it charming for me, but it also hinders its growth, and it's, you know, it's not as contemporary for our culture and our country. But I still think you should respect. I'm with you, John. I agree with you 100%. Let's talk about one last thing, just for fun. Did you watch a lot of Olympics?
So here's my take. The Olympics are interesting because I feel like it's the biggest event every 4 years that nobody knows about. It's like, you know, it's coming, but you never know the dates. You don't know when it starts. You don't know when it ends, but you do know about gymnastics. You do know about the basketball, and you know a little bit about the track and field, I feel like. And that's about it. Like, I just don't, like, I feel like it's not, like, I'm not going to say promoted. I just don't feel like it's as mainstream as it should be. Like, I feel like it's something that happens every 4 years. You should be, like, locked in. Like, everybody should be, it's like the Super Bowl. Like, you should be watching everything. But I don't know. I watch some of it. I watch the basketball. I've watched a little bit here and there of, like, I saw some ping pong. That was crazy. I just like to watch that because it's insane. I don't understand how people can do it. you know, the gymnastics.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, we can get, I mean, the breakdancing was terrible and it's not coming back, but baseball's coming back, and I don't know what the rules are going to be. Like soccer, it's U23, except you can have three guys who are older. And I don't know what baseball, because I don't think Major League Baseball is going to take time off to have it. So I don't know what they're going to do. But baseball in the Olympics, I think baseball is a great Olympic sport because there are multiple countries that are great. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Cuba will be so interesting. The Dominican as a team would be so interesting. Obviously, the U.S. still has probably the most players to choose from. But an Olympic competition in baseball would be fun.
Yeah, it'd be great. But, you know, we talked about this before. How do you make it happen? I mean, this is something that the players union and the owners are going to have to negotiate. I mean, this is nothing that they're just going to be able to flip their switch and just do. And, you're talking about something 4 years from now. Are you going to move the All-Star game? Are you going to actually make a break? Because the only way that it's going to be a marquee event is if the marquee players play. That's it. I mean, if LeBron James and Steph Curry are out there playing for basketball, I want to see Aaron Judge and Mike Trout or whoever, you know, I want to see those guys out there playing. I want to see the Ohtanis. I want to see the Trouts. I want to see the Sotos. Like, that's what's going to draw in the viewers. And I just don't see that happening because all the dollars involved, all the injury prospects involved. It's just the players would have to sacrifice too much and the owners aren't going to want to sacrifice what they're going to have to sacrifice. So it's going to be a very interesting next 4 years to see how this whole thing pans out.
Yeah, it will be. I agree. I do think the sport itself belongs.
Yes.
And I'm sort of tired of this hokey crap. I mean, if it's a sport where like squash, nobody really cares about squash, but it's truly an international game that should be in the Olympics. Baseball is an international game. Like breakdancing it's not really a sport. 3-on-3 basketball, I think, is kind of silly too.
Yeah, what is the deal with that? Like, I don't get it. Just searching for stuff to find? Like,
yes.
Because, all right, we talk about breakdancing. Like, I remember breakdancing like in the 80s, right? Like, boom boxes and cardboard. Like, you would, like, be walking by the library and dudes would just be out front spinning over their heads and going, doing crazy stuff. And I remember sitting there in awe watching this. And then
it is athleticism.
I for the million years, I couldn't even do a backspin. I was like trying to figure out how to do that. And like, how are these guys still spinning? I can go around once and I'm done. But then you watch this lady from Australia, Ray Gun, and it looks like my dog's rolling around on the ground. It's like the memes just went nuts with this. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, time out. Like, this person had to get here to do this. Like, you don't just show up at the Olympics to do this. Like, this person went through qualifying. This person had to, like, win a national event with this routine. And someone said, oh, this is great. You're going to do just awesome in the Olympics. Nobody's going to ridicule you for this. Go for it. Come on now. I mean, Jesus. And then, like, you're talking about coming off of the man woman who won the boxing for the women's boxing, and now that person is a class action lawsuit against Twitter for hateful speech and all that. They filed a lawsuit. It's like, I mean, come on, what are we doing here? Like, you're putting yourself in a position. Like, now have everybody going to start suing Twitter for people banging on them? I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to be in a women's sport, be a woman, I guess. I don't know. I don't know the whole situation there.
I'm gonna let you off the hook here. Let's end it. Let's end it right
there.
It's
crazy. I just don't get it. Like, why are we doing breakdancing and that kind of stuff in the Olympics? I know it's not coming back, but it shouldn't have been there to begin with. Like, it's like they're grabbing at straws.
They're trying to draw in young people, and it ends up being ridiculous. But the Olympics, you know, were very popular this summer. So
the ratings were good. They were.
Yeah.
How much did you watch, Brian?
I actually, my wife and daughter are into it, so I watched a little more than I would have normally, and I love the fact that they had the stuff on live. So, you know, my work day is different than most, and so in the middle of the day, there was a bunch of live sports.
That was nice. I did like that.
Who doesn't want to watch some live sports in the middle of the day? I was very much into that. But anyway, we got to run. Hope you listen and share, of course. It's Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.